Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Moldovan Coffee Break, a Europe United and European Network production. My name is Ken Sweeney.
And I'm Loredana Prijmirano.
And in this 6-part podcast series, we are casting a spotlight on the country of Moldova so as to examine what it is like to grow up in the Moldova of 2021. Our aim is to portray Moldova for what it really is, a culture-rich country with a unique past and a hopeful future.
So I have been sitting down for a coffee with young Moldovans recently to discuss their thoughts and feelings about their country. The Moldovan Coffee Break will reveal a vibrant Moldova that is ready to show the rest of the world that they are here. In this episode, we chat with Cristina Carmanu. Cristina is a master's student in Moldova, and we are discussing media today.
Hi, Loredana, how are you?
I'm fine, Ken, and you?
A little bit sad because this is the last episode 6 of our exciting podcast. It's been a great experience for me. I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
Of course, it was really interesting, like, to rediscover Moldova through the eyes of the young generation.
Yeah, I think what we've done is we've created a little bit of an archive for people to listen back on and catch a glimpse of what Moldova is like right now, and of course including the fact that we have a pandemic racing across the world. And it's interesting to see that what we've done is we've got something that maybe can be used for academics and so on.
Yes, people that just want to discover weird country for the most.
Well, hopefully we've dispelled the weirdness a little bit.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a brilliant final interview lined up. We are discussing the media today. I love the media because obviously that's what we do. And we're talking to Cristina Carmanu. Cristina is a student who spent time working in the media. Now, she's not doing that anymore, but she did spend quite a significant time there. So she has a lot to say on that. And it's really great to hear a young person giving their views on what the state of the media is in Moldova. Can you tell us a little bit about Cristina? I know you were saying at the intro that she's a student, but maybe you can tell us a little bit more before we hear the interview.
Yes, sure. So Cristina, she's 23 years old. As I said, she's a master's student. And at the time that we spoke, she was doing an internship related to foreign development policy. And she worked for Ziarul de Gardă as a translator at editor for the English version of the website.
Excellent. Obviously, we'll talk about the media platform that she worked for later on, but we'll have a listen to the interview. What was the first question you asked her?
I asked her to explain to our listeners the current state of media in Moldova, if there are enough independent media outlets, and how is the situation developing.
Great. So let's listen to that interview now.
I wouldn't say there is enough independent media outlets. Maybe not a few of them if you compare them to the authoritarian regimes or Belarus or North Korea, for example. But it's not enough. There is never enough independent mass media outlets. We have a few, but there is also the media empire of the Socialist Party. And there is also a very big influence of the Russian media. And there is also the continuously national TV station Moldova Unu and Radio Moldova, which are like balancing and always trying to be on the side to who's own power, but not to the people's side. And they are a bit biased to the politicians that come to power. So definitely not enough media, definitely not enough investigative newspaper, definitely not enough TV station that will report events as they are, and maybe as well not enough control on the mass media in the sense that there are TV channels that are biased and they are not like sanctioned, they are not like audiovisual council. Doesn't give them any, no, this is enough, don't do this, or like.
So in this context, the president of Moldova recently sued the media platform you were working for. How hard, in your opinion, is for an independent media platform to survive in Moldova?
Yeah, it is very hard because the owned mass media, let's say, has some sponsor, a big sponsor, if you can call him or her like that. The independent mass media has to search for projects, for continuously search for projects, continuously cooperate and continuously be involved in different projects, and has to search for sources of income. And the mass media outlet for whom I worked was also like a print one, and you have to also like have lots of to maintain this print version. And from the print version, you don't get too much income, obviously, yeah, because the printing version is dying. So again, turning back to the same point, you have to search for different projects. You have to cooperate with different international organizations. You have to take on a lot of projects. Maybe you have to do other things which maybe you wouldn't do if you would like money coming from somewhere, sources coming from somewhere. And if we coming to the question of investigations, the investigations are very hard to do, and you need a lot of money and a lot of resources. I mean, by a lot, I mean like you need this journalist to be paid. You need this journalist to have access to a lot of information. And the information in Moldova, as far as I know, costs money, especially when the Democratic Party was governing the Republic of Moldova. It costed a lot of money to get the information. For example, information from the land registry agency, or information about buildings, where they were located and everything. So it's definitely not an easy job. And definitely you have a like 3-4 page investigation, and people only like might read half of it or only the beginning of it. So as an investigative journalist, you have to
devote a
keep
lot
yourself
of
motivated at some point.
In this context, do you think that young Moldovians are sufficiently educated about the importance of unbiased information and qualitative information?
Honestly speaking, when some years ago I thought the young generation will be the one who can save Moldova, let's say, or get it out of the dark side, I don't know. But now I'm not sure about this anymore, even taking into consideration this pandemic in Moldova. And there is like a lot of young people who are, normally I would think they are more reasonable, and they would be more like reasonable, yeah. And they will take the issue more seriously, and it's not happening. It's not happening at all. They are storming into the pubs, they are storming into the clubs, they are storming into the nightlife and everything, and they don't take this pandemic seriously. They don't take everything seriously. So there is a need of informing and media literacy for the young people. There is an even dire need for media literacy among the older people, like the age, let's say, up to from 35 maybe on, like up to 50 and 60, because this generation is the one that continuously spreads fake news. And the younger generation, what is the problem with the younger generation? Maybe they can like distinguish fake news from the like real news. The their problem is that they don't care anymore.
And was the media platform you were working for somehow combating disinformation or fighting propaganda?
Yeah, it was fighting the fake news, fighting the debunking fake news, and trying to give people the real facts. They were working together with the Stop False from Moldova. And aside from that, they were doing also their own articles. For example, since this pandemic sparked, since the outbreak of the pandemic, not only in Moldova, but in the whole world, there was also a pandemic at the same time of fake news. Like, and in Moldova, we had this news. I'm not sure if you heard of it, but we had this problem with all the people were claiming that in Moldova, there are people that take money just to register their relatives that they died from COVID, and the state is paying them. So there were two big investigations done by Ziarul de Gardă, where we debunked this false information. And like we took the sides, I mean, took the opinions from the people, took the opinion from the experts, took the opinion from more sides, and tried to prove that such thing cannot possibly happen, and it's impossible to have such a thing. Another investigation was related to more fake news and messages, for example, close your windows because today and plane will spread some disinfectant all over the places, and all of these were debunked. Even one of our reporters wrote about a protest in Germany against the COVID-19, and they were stating like these are fake images which were taken during a concert in Switzerland, and they are using the images here for this protest in Germany. So Ziarul de Gardă is continuously trying to debunk fake news, I would say even all around the world where they spot them. And if they don't participate in debunking them, at least they can like take the text and publish so people are aware. I mean, give this information to their audience as well.
And finally, my question for you is, are you planning on leaving Moldova at some point or moving abroad?
3 years ago, I was planning to live in Moldova and make a change, to make a career, make a change, see that something is changing. But year after year, somehow I said that I'm not sure anymore if Moldova can be changed. So I'm actually planning to move forward and to move abroad, yeah.
For our final interview, that was really interesting. Big thanks to Christina for taking the time. And of course, for being so honest as well, because we got some home truths about media in Moldova there. And that's really good to see. The first question I wanted to know was the media outlet that she worked for. Can you tell us a little bit about what the status of it is at the moment?
Yes. So Ziarul de Gardă is actually the first media investigation outlet, and they have a printed version. But right now, of course, with digitalization, they are, this is why they were known for. But now, of course, they're active online. They're writing about priority subjects for our society. I'd say they're writing about corruption as well, and about the violations of human rights. So it's independent, a media outlet. That's important to mention.
Sure.
And it's one of the oldest in Moldova.
Just to go to what Christina was talking about, she stated that there's not enough independent media in Moldova. You know, this is going into state broadcasting against private individuals and private media platforms. A state broadcaster supporting the government, that's not new. And while that practice is kind of more or less, well, it's supposedly gone in Western Europe, although some people would say the BBC are either one way or the other, it still remains a lot in Eastern Europe. I mean, Polish state broadcaster TVP is a very good example of, you know, being a mouthpiece for the current government that's there. Do you think that the role of a state broadcaster is to be impartial? And if so, can this be improved in Moldova?
I definitely think their role should be impartial. They should be neutral. They should reflect the reality and not just like the opinion of the current government. Unfortunately, in Moldova, the state broadcaster was really used for promoting personal interests of politicians and reflecting their version of the reality. And it's a problem, of course. It was an even bigger problem 4 years ago when we were during that period which the state was captured, and it was lying to half of the population of Moldova, because in villages not all of them, but most of them have access only to the state broadcaster, and they were seeing only this version of reality. They did not have the opportunity to have different positions on that. And because they were seeing that, their opinion was manipulated and it was successful because the party was continuing to get lots of votes from rural areas because the misinformation was at the highest level. So when you have such an experience as a country, of course, you understand how important is for a state broadcaster to be independent. We learned it the hard way. And not only just to present, you know, the parallel reality of it, but for people to actually know what's happening there, because everything is happening in the big cities, and mostly in everything is concentrated in Chisinau, in the capital. So if you only see it from the distance, you are disconnected.
Do you have now a number of private channels that are able to get access to the rural areas?
Yes, now the situation improved, and it was during the two last years actually that it got better, and people are having this access to multiple channels. But still, like, because media here is it was controlled by two big powers, you know, and one of them, it is the socialist parties, like a set of channels that they have. I think they're like four. And like, in theory, you know, it's like four different channels which project the same opinion.
So, okay, that's varied.
Yeah. So it's that, and people have access to that. So if you think like from this perspective, they have access to like two independent, right, channels, and then four that are having the same political view. And then the national state broadcast. So they are still in the minority.
I see. And what media outlets, say, would young people follow in Moldova? I presume it would be more online than rather on television and radio.
Yes, it's definitely more online. Of course, like the TV here, I think it's used more than in the Western countries, but like by the older generation. But still, like, they're broadcasting everything online as well. So basically, it's the same access. But for the young people, it's more like, because I can talk about my bubble, and from my bubble, everyone is like following the independent media outlets, of course. And they are fairly new. They're still developing, but sometimes they're doing mistakes, but it's okay. Everyone needs to learn. If I was to name some, it for sure Ziaru de Gardă, it's TV8. It's an interesting outlet because it was banned. Banned in a sense that their access was restricted to the political events when the state was captured. And Jurnal TV, Moldova.org, so it's their only online. It's an online platform, while others have TV channel. But it's interesting to follow this development of independent media, because they get attacked because they are surviving by foreign grants. So sometimes politicians use this as a counter argument for them, like, you are not being fair on what you are saying because you are being paid by you, you know, or something like this. While the four channels which I was talking about by the socialists are really like funded through Russian money. So it's interesting, but so complicated as always.
It certainly is. Anna, I'm curious about the role, say, of non-Moldovan media in Moldova. I mean, for example, what do you think of the role, say, of Radio Free Europe, or what they're known as Radio Liberty in Moldova? Because they do have a significant presence there, don't they?
They do, but they're doing interesting, they're covering interesting aspects, like their approach is more on tackling human rights violations. They're talking about, they're doing interviews about this. It's really interesting. Like, I would say it's different from what you are usually reading in the media outlets, because it's mostly political, you know, and then they come with this different approach. But it's important. It's amongst the ones that young people would say that they are following, but it's not the first one you are going to check for some information, you know, it's definitely not the first one.
And in terms of, say, Romanian TV and Romanian media and Russian media, I suppose there's a lot of that coming into Moldova as well.
Of course, we even had some legislation adopted to restrict the broadcasting from Russia, which, I don't know, I mean, in theory, they have a rationale for doing that because the state media in Russia are promoting disinformation, their own propaganda and stuff like that. So people are really vulnerable to that because, again, there are many persons that are in favor of closer ties with Russia and they're nostalgic about the Soviet times. So it's like only fuel for them. But also, we do have media channels from Romania and they're quite popular because it's like we have ProTV. It's a mix, you know, you can watch the news from Romania, you can watch the news from Moldova as well, like at different times, of course. And it's the same for Russia. We have a national Russian state channel. It is also broadcasted here.
And you would also have, say, Russia Today and Sputnik and so on pushing into...
To be honest, I don't know because I'm not...
Nobody watches it that has it anyway. Yeah, exactly. I know. And can I just finally ask you, I mean, in terms of, say, we have to also include when we're talking about media, we have to also include, say, pop culture. Would Moldovan media have a lot of pop culture magazines and media platforms?
It was more popular, I don't know, 7 years ago, or perhaps for me it was more popular there, you never know, but I think now we moved away from that as a society, because, I mean, okay, again, there is a bubble that is really into that. I mean, pop magazines, their appearance there. Sometimes they even pay money to be there, to be included there. So for the larger population, for the larger part of the society, when you hear that somebody pays to be titled as the most beautiful woman of Moldova, you're like, okay, no, why would you do that?
So that's unusual. I mean, like, because if you look at Western culture, I mean, it's flooded with these magazines. You know, they've started off, say, with just general, like, we used to call them coffee, you know, breakfast morning table magazines for women, you know, and they had all the traditional stuff that women are supposed to do, whether it be knitting and all those kind of nonsense. But like nowadays, those magazines have obviously developed. They become gossip magazines and they obviously get the idea from America. Is there a strong influence of American style media in Moldova? In other words, how the presentations are done, you know, what style of programs are they done in? Is that very American or does it still have a particular style that you could probably call Moldovan?
I don't think it's American. I definitely don't see that influence on that. I would say it's more Western Europe influence. Also, it's interesting because, again, it's like we are in a developing stage with media as well. So everyone is like looking for their own concept which works on here, and of course you can spot different parts of some important outlets in Europe, you know, like being implemented. But it's nice because in the end, like, we need inspiration, of course, and we need to do it right in a way. And it's nice because it's adapting to our society here. So for instance, what I find interesting is, you know, Diaz, our network partner, which is covering our series.
Thank you to them.
Yes, big thank you. They initially created themselves as a platform which is targeting youth, but they evolved from that into like covering a lot of issues and really, really broad, like from food to traveling to daily news, political news as well, musical, music related and everything. So basically, they're covering everything. And it's a nice way that they are doing because they're also trying to find a way to work with the audience and see what's the most interesting. But at the same time, they're introducing some progressing ideas into the minds of the young generation. So for instance, they introduced this campaign they have that they're using the feminine version of all the positions.
Oh, excellent idea, yeah.
So in Romanian, it sounds weird and there is a lot of controversy around that because people are like, why do you need to change the language? You know, it's just not right in the language standard. But their position is that the Romanian language is always evolving and we can always by ourselves can introduce some new aspects to it. So in this way, you know, it's also a progressive idea that they are trying to promote to the young generation. So it's just interesting to observe these things, you know, how they are trying to work.
And of course, we have to mention that in episode 3, our guest, Anna Maria, she had a series of info videos, which she was broadcasting in conjunction with Diaz.
Yes, yes. Așa o situație.
Yeah, they were really, really cool, I have to say. Brilliant to see that. We want to get back to a little bit about Cristina as well. I wanted to ask you about the amount of young people that are interested in getting into journalism. I know you obviously don't have figures in front of you, but from your own personal experience in talking to Cristina, do you think it's an attractive option for young people to go and study journalism in Moldova?
I remember I was part of a project. I think it was the period in which I was finding myself. And it was like a future journalist or something like that. And I was surprised to see that there were at that point a lot of people interested in that. And I think it was actually because it was again that period when the independent media was a brave thing to do, and everyone was curious about the insights. Right now, I know it's still an attractive option for young people, but it's, I guess, what's stopping them. It's again, perhaps the funding, because it's hard to maintain an outlet here, an independent outlet, if you want to stay like that. I would say it's still option, but just keeping in mind that it's hard to be financially stable while doing that.
And of course, the media around the world is, it's not as financially stable as it used to be. So even independent journalists and writers and anybody that really wants to get involved in media, you know, you got to start at the very bottom from a financial sense. So it's difficult, I'm sure, for even journalists in Moldova to try and make a living. And that's probably a big issue, which brings me to my final question about Cristina. We asked this, of course, of everybody. And we asked Cristina, was she ever interested in staying in Moldova or is she thinking of moving abroad? She seemed to be the most pessimistic about her future in Moldova. I think she said that she doesn't want to stay. Yeah. So she's probably going to have to move abroad. I'm wondering if her work in the Guardia had anything to do with that. I mean, in other words, was she just exposed to so much stuff going on in Moldova that she just said, I had enough?
Well, actually, it's an interesting perspective to think. Like, yeah, you are constantly, you know, bombarding and covering every day so many negative news. But I think, yes, indeed, if you are covering them and you interact somehow with them, like in a more direct way than us just reading them. So perhaps it can be, of course, but also like the personal experience daily, you know, because we talked with Cristina afterwards, like more about the problems of Moldova. And it's just like a constant negative experience for the last few years, because she said that in the beginning, like some years ago, she wanted to stay, but now she's skeptical about it. So, you know, something changed, perhaps the lack of change, because She was waiting for something to happen, for it to become better, but it's stagnating. So it might be that as well.
I mean, not to take away from a decision, it's fine. I mean, we've had a very positive reaction to people who, when we asked this question, all six people, you know, five people have said that they really want to stay in Moldova. And, you know, that's a pretty good percentage. And if we do have one person who doesn't want to stay, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, I'm sure it's not just a negative reaction towards the country. There's ambition, there's wanting to see the world. Mm-hmm. There's more access to travel and freedom of movement than there ever was in Moldova of any other generation. So, you know, there's nothing wrong, in my opinion, of taking advantage of that situation. And as I said, it's not as if she kind of called the country, you know, the worst place in the world or Syria. or Syria, as our previous guest called it once, which I think was a little bit unfair anyway, but just to reiterate that, you know, but I mean, we all have decisions, we all have reasons why we want to go. So, you know, we can only compliment Christina for being so honest and saying fair play to her if she wants to go. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure at some point or another, she may want to return, or at least there's always the option to return, even, you know, on holidays and so on. We all know people who have settled down in other countries. And the great thing about freedom of movement around Europe and the world, even, and we're not just talking about the EU freedom of movement, is that you can get home, you know, within 24 hours if you mm-hmm. need to. For sure, if there's a pandemic out there, that's a completely different situation. It's a set of circumstances that are completely non-political. But in terms of getting a social standing and for your own well-being and, you know, just getting home for the home fire, so to speak, you know, it's amazing that in the year 2021, you can do that. Whereas, say, 40 years ago, if you came from Moldova and you wanted to go and work in, say, even Czechoslovakia as it was then, or Hungary, that was virtually impossible. I mean, you had to spend, you know, 6 months trying to get there. So, and you had to have a really good reason for being there. It's not like you want to just go and travel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact is that we are in a place now, pandemic aside, where for the people of Moldova, the opportunities are out there. And sure, who would begrudge them for taking it, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, Ireland, for example, is the country that's travelled probably the most. We're everywhere. so there's no reason, you know, this is why we kind of say we can't be racist about people coming to our country, because we're everywhere mm-hmm. else. So, you know, it would be extremely hypocritical of us to be anyway kind of begrudging foreign people coming into our country to live. So, and of course, we generally don't. I mean, we're not a society based on any of those kind of stereotypes. As I said, we're finishing up this series, and I mean, overall thoughts, how the series has panned out. Were you happy with the ending?
I think I'm really happy because we managed to cover different aspects of the society here. So different problems and really diverse opinions, you know, because everyone managed to communicate their own way of seeing the reality here. But about the ending, I mean, I'm sure we could discover even more. But I'm just happy that we managed to cover the main, I would say, like, main places Moldova hurts. Let's say it was important to explain this aspects and how much of an impact they have on the society.
Yeah, I think what we did was, well, what you did was you prevented the podcast from becoming A, you know, a bashing of Moldova, or B, a travel log, because that's the two worst things that any country can be, because then you never get to see the real country. And what we've done here, I suppose, what we tried to do, and we hope that our listeners will agree with us, is that we've managed to cover all the basics, really, from a young person's point of view. And, you know, there's lots of other things. Obviously, there's classes, you know, people in different levels of earnings and all that. You could go, as you said, you could go into a lot of detail on it. But I suppose, you know, what we've done is we've hopefully opened the door for people to look at Moldova in a different way, because that was always my goal when originally you approached me. You said to me that I want to do something about Moldova. And I said, well, that's what we need to do. We need to try and get a set of podcasts that open the door for other people to investigate Moldova, rather than us being the Bible, so to mm-hmm. speak, for the country at the moment. Because, you know, that would be completely ridiculous, and nobody can do that. Not even the government can do that. So I just hope that people will take the opportunity to listen to all of our series and also to make a decision for themselves and not to go onto YouTube and look at some guy, you know, who's come over from, you know, California, and he's been completely funded by some privateer organization to make, you know, a funny video about Moldova, because that's not what Moldova is about. I've never been to Moldova. From my experience of speaking to you and to other people in this podcast series, that is nothing to do with Moldova. And that's the thing that we need to get rid of. And also, you know, there's so many positive aspects. You know, there's been people contacting me both online and, you know, through email and so on, just trying to basically sell themselves in Moldova, which is brilliant, because that's what you want. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they're a wine producer or they're setting up an internet company or whatever, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to be able to have the podcast as an honest representation of the country. And for sure, it has lots of problems. I mean, every country has problems. Your problems are different to other countries, but, you know, nobody's perfect. And I think, you know, congratulations on you for doing such an amazing job of getting all these young people together and getting to speak so candidly about their country. And to be also, I think one thing that you've managed to get out of those people, which is really difficult to do sometimes, is to get passion from them. You know, because their story can quickly become very negative. And I think what you've managed to do there is you managed to stop that from happening too much. Sure, there's a few negative references, but generally, I think at the end of it, what you've managed to do is keep the story on a level field, you know, neither positive, too much positive, or too much negative. So, you know, congratulations on you for doing
that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, and it's brilliant. And the other thing I just wanted to say, we did get a bit of help from outside sources. Your own organization, Open Dialogue, helped us out, of course, with a bit of promotions and stuff like that. And of course, we do want to thank Diaz for publishing a weekly article on each of the podcasts.
Exactly. I think it was important, because we also wanted, while explaining Moldova to the Western audience, to also have a bit of reflection for the ones that call it home, you know.
Yeah, they were like a conduit for us. So can we just, I just want to give a shout out to them. So if you're interested, look, when you go onto Google and you click on their website, it is in Romanian, but the thing is, it'll automatically translate. And the translation's not too bad. You know, it's not too bad. So please do go online there. Their website address is diez.md. That's diez.md. So please do take the time to go on there and have a look, because there's a lot of, as you said there, there's a hell of a lot of stuff there that's really interesting about Moldova, and it'll definitely help to give you a broader picture.
Also, again, it's through the youth's eyes, so it's interesting.
Yeah, and that's where we're aiming for here today. I mean, I think what we'll have to do is we'll probably look maybe at the future and see if we can work on something else. We do have a little few ideas, but we're not going to reveal them as such. So I don't think this will be the end of the Moldovan coffee break. We might take a little break, as we say.
Yes.
Excuse the pun. But we will be back probably with some ideas. What do you think?
Yes, and I'm really excited about working on the next few ideas of ours.
That is it for us in the Moldovan Coffee Break. You've been listening, of course, to episode 6. This has been the final episode. As I said, a big thank you to Christina Cameranu for taking the time to talk with us. And of course, I want to thank all our participants who gave their valuable time for us, and to give all of them a big shout. Can we just run through the names, Loredana? So maybe you can tell us who we had from all of the episodes, so we can say thank you to them all.
So big thank you to Katarina Martin, Vasile Hargel, Alina Maria Zurcanu, Loredana Gamurad, Marcel Lazar, and Cristina Carmanu.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you to all of you. If it's such a sad way the pandemic is, I'd probably be in Moldova trying to organize a party for all the guys, but unfortunately, that can't happen. Now, just finally, you can access, download, or subscribe to our podcast via all the major platforms. We're there as the Moldovan Coffee Break, or you can look us up under the European Network. You can also follow us via our Facebook page, which is europeunited.eu. We're on Twitter as well at EuronetPod, which is all one word, or you can get us on our website at europeunited.eu. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. We've looked at the numbers that people are downloading on our podcast, and it's brilliant. So really appreciate that. Everyone's taking the time to listen to each individual podcast. And again, thank you, Loredana, for taking so much effort and work and time to do this. And hopefully, as I said, it'll be something that people can listen to for quite a while.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think it's really important to have more projects like this.
This is what we do.
Yeah.
Goodbye, everybody. Take care.
Bye-bye.